This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. You can't get just one. Okay, so that's not like some marketing hyperbole. You literally can't get just one. They come in twos. So like, if you want just one, you're going to need to find a friend who loves slow-roasted chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch sauce. Or a friend of a friend, or have an awkward conversation with a complete stranger to see if they're obsessed with chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch. Or you could just like eat them both because you're obsessed with slow-roasted chicken, bacon. Okay, you get the idea. The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. At participating Taco Bell U.S. locations for limited time while supplies last.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Antler Up Podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear. We got a fun show for you all today. What's happening, everybody? Welcome back to this week's episode. We're on episode 235, and I'm joined by a good friend of mine from Arizona. I got the dialed in hunter. I got Josh Kirshner on the line today. Really enjoyed this conversation. Really just always enjoy having a time where I could designate some time of my day to talk to Josh, because even through text message, even through phone calls when we're not recording, Josh is just a wonderful individual. And coming from Arizona, Josh is a plethora of knowledge when it comes to hunting out west, whether it's spring bear, whether it's elk, mule deer, always gets it done, backpack hunting, all that stuff. And guess what? Josh just released his second book, Becoming a Bow Hunter. It's like a beginner's complete guide. So just always out there wanting to help people get better and get out here and shoot their bow, all that type of stuff. So always respect that. But in this conversation, we got the Western hunts coming up here in the next couple weeks for certain individuals. So we wanted to kind of simplify things even more with Josh, to hear his take on certain things of not over complicating gear, how he handles this food intake out there, and just some other little tidbits that hopefully you could take with you if you're going out west, or even here in the East Coast if you're hunting some whitetail or whatever you like to get after. So check out dialedinhunter.com. You'll be seeing all his different types of articles, videos, everything that Josh does. He does, it seems to be gold. So keep up the good work, dude. And if you like what you hear, check out antlerupoutdoors.com. Share it with friends, share it with family members, and look forward to sharing some new news to you that we could hopefully be able to share with you here soon. Maybe do some type of giveaway with it as well. While we're at it, though, check out tethered.com. Go over on that left side of the website, and obviously you'll get all the categories for any of all the items to sell. But if all the way towards the bottom, there's like a garage sale button. You can click on that. If there's like a notion that you need for extra discount price, if you're interested in something like that, there's even the menaces on there for a discounted price. So check out those things if you're just looking for some other little tidbits that Tethered's trying to get rid of. So check that out over at tethered.com. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Enjoy this episode. Keep things simple. Shoot your bow, spend time with your family, scout, take a deep breath, enjoy life, man. Antler up. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show this week. I'm joined by the Dialed In Hunter. I got Josh Kirshner on the phone. Oh, actually on the video and on the phone, I guess you could say. But Josh, man, I appreciate you coming on, because what an exciting time for many different reasons. Number one, this is actually our second podcast within a year, which is fantastic. And number two, you know, to kind of build upon that, number one, we had such a big gap. You know, we've always kept in touch. We would do phone calls. We would send text messages, congratulations on certain life things and hunting things. And, you know, yeah. So we finally recorded that. But then number two, you just recently released the number one new release book on Amazon, which is pretty frigging cool, man. You have your brand new book, Becoming a Bow Hunter, that goes along with, you can say, from what, 4 years ago now, I think, Becoming a Backpack Hunter. So, man, this is a really cool time to have you on. So, number one, congratulations on that. It's the number one new release in the hunting category on Amazon, dude. I bet you're pretty stoked.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. We chatted a little bit, you know, before we hit record here, and I spent 3 years working on the book, and there was a lot of times where I was, you know, just felt like it was moving like a snail, you know, and lost a little motivation here and there, right? Throughout the 3 years is a long time, you know, but just stuck with it, kept chipping away at the old block, and now it's finally done. And we were laughing about this before, but like, I feel like there's a little part of my day that's missing now. You know, like, cause I don't have the book to work on, but, super stoked that it's done. I'm so proud of how it came out. It is, in my opinion, obviously I'm biased, but like, I really, really wish I would have had something like this when I started bow hunting. The book's called Becoming a Bow Hunter, a complete, beginner's guide to archery hunting. And that is precisely what it is. It is like, it goes from, you don't even have a bow yet. Like, how do you do that? Right. Like, how do you buy a bow? Goes to that all the way to you're putting an animal in your freezer. You know what I mean? And so everything in between, I fully, fully believe, like, if for people that are new to bow hunting, or maybe you've been bow hunting for a couple years now and you just haven't found success yet, I truly believe that this book is going to help you fill your first tag. And I say that because everything in the book has helped me fill tags. Okay. So like, I know everything in here works. There's some guest contributions. Brad Brooks does a piece in there on calling. Jace Bowserman does a piece in there on ambush hunting. So stoked that those guys contributed to it. Oh, they're both a wealth of knowledge. And I'm just super proud, man. I think folks are going to like
them. Yeah, dude, I'm, like I said, congratulations on that, just because obviously it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work that we don't see behind the scenes. And like you said, having awesome contributors like Jace and like Brad, that's awesome. And man, I'm really excited for you, and, you know, definitely go check that out. And like I said too, if you're, like you were like me, using his, you know, Becoming a Backpack Hunter book too as a huge reference. And that's what we're going to get into today. We are going to discuss the Western hunting kind of tactics. We're going to keep things simple. We're going to continue this narrative. And when I thought about having these keep it simple discussions of, you know, not overcomplicating things, there were certain individuals that popped in my head, and I was like Andy May. There were a couple others for certain other topics that we've had. And then it was like Josh, no doubt about it, for Western. And it like timing worked out great. And dude, it just, and I didn't even know about the book dropping. So it was just kind of one of those like natural things that just seamlessly worked together. So this is all in all honesty, this is great. So if you are newer, and like Josh said, you haven't had a lot of success, whether it is hunting, whether it is, you know, figuring out your bow and shooting and all that stuff, check it out. Cause Josh, you do a great job with the video side of things, with that type of stuff, talking gear and broadheads and techniques and stuff like that. That just, you know, even I could learn from it, right? I'm sure you even kind of look at certain other content and see like, oh, that is cool, I could learn from that as well. You know, that's the kicker of what we do, is we are always learning and growing, and it's just not the end all be all with that. And that's the one aspect of with your writing I really like. So definitely check that out. But so yeah, so we're going to be talking about like the keeping things simple, man. So to kind of, I guess, before we dive into that real quick, obviously with the book, you were busy kind of finalizing that. How was your spring? Because I know one of your I would say probably other than the backpack hunting, is backpack hunting for some spring bear, man. So how was your spring?
It was interesting. So I did Idaho. This is one of the first years I haven't hunted in Arizona in the springtime in a long time. I ended up making two trips to Idaho though. The first trip was in early April, which I normally go later. But just because of like I had this this is all my wife's fault. Our anniversary was coming up, okay? We got married on May 4th. So traditionally, I'm usually gone for our wedding anniversary. I'm usually bear hunting. So she was like, no way, this is a big year, you're not missing this anniversary. So I bear hunted a smidge earlier than I normally do, which was fine. But in the spring in the mountains, earlier you are, the more unpredictable weather is. So you kind of get a lot of systems coming in and out. And that's exactly what we experienced. You know, we were in there for, we packed in for like 6 days, and a lot of crud, you know, a lot of crud weather. Only saw two bears throughout that time, which I normally see, just to give some perspective. Normally throughout a week, I usually see like 8 or 9 bears, you know, throughout a week within a pretty confined area. And that gives me enough to play around with for the time I'm there. But this time, yeah, only two bears. They were small bears. Both of them was very interesting. Both of them were holding very tight to certain areas, which means that they were near their dens, right? Like they were still kind of sleepy from winter time. So they weren't traveling a whole ton. So yeah, I didn't even make a stalk, dude, on the first hunt. Went in there, had a couple buddies with me, one that has never been to Idaho, Brian. He did a film with me last year in Arizona for Fall Bear. We just hit it off, and I was like, hey, you want to go to Idaho? and he jumped on that. So he came in, that was his first time experiencing that. And we had a bear last day, we're coming out, and we had a bear across the river from us that was within rifle range. He could have shot, but I was looking at where that bear was. And Jeremy, I've done some dumb stuff for bears, like, to, you know what I mean? But like where that bear was, I just could not see a route that would definitely put me where he was. Right. So like, I couldn't guarantee that we'd be able to get to him. Plus he was on like a cliff right above the river. All right. So what goes up must come down. Right. And so there was a lot of variables at play here. And I told Brian, I'm like, listen, dude, I know you want to shoot your first bear, but like some of these bears you're just not going to get to, you know, and it would be irresponsible to pull the trigger and have him fall in the river and get taken away, and then you're never going to find. And then it's like, what was that? You know, like, why'd you do that? Right. So we, you know what? I was super proud of him. He was like, you know what? You're right. You know, we'll be back. You know what I mean? So we left. So I went back in a couple weeks later, solo, drove another 18 hours from my house to get back up in there. And I saw like, I think I saw 9 bears on that run, but just never saw one I wanted, dude. You know, I just never, like, they were all smaller bears, and I was like, what, am I getting older or something like that? You know, like just getting more choosy. But like, I truly, you know, they were all kind of like puppy dogs. And then I saw like a sow and cub, 2 sow and cubs. So yeah, just nothing I wanted to pull the trigger on. So I walked out with a smile on my face and went turkey hunting after that with my daughter.
That's cool, man. How did that go?
It was super fun. You know, I like you said, like bears are one of my big passions. So I'm never in the turkey woods a whole lot. But a couple years ago, I told myself, I was like, you know what? I think I want to learn this turkey thing for my kid. Mm-hmm. Really, you know, because it's like a low stress hunt. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can involve the family. We made a family camping trip out of it, you know, like we all went up there, brought the pop-up camper. I would go hunting for the morning, come back and just hang out with my girls, you know. We'd shoot bows, go on nature hikes. It was awesome. I came so close to getting one though, dude. Mm-hmm. Like I've never, so bear hunter, right? I've never seen a turkey strutting. Ooh, in person.
Yeah. It's pretty, okay, cool, man.
So it's pretty awesome. Yeah. Okay. So like I am in the dark. Okay. So coincidentally, my wife is being super picky about where we want to camp. So naturally I'm driving all over Tarnation, right? In doing so, a group of Jakes runs across the road. And I was like, oh, sweet, mark that, you know. Yep. So I came back to that area in the dark the next morning, shut the truck door, just started lighting up around me, you know. And I was like, this is awesome. So the first morning I went in and tried to set up on those gobbles, right? And I had a decoy out and everything. And we were chatting back and forth. There was probably 5 toms around me. We were chatting back and forth for a while, but they like incrementally moved away, which is interesting. And that's what I've experienced a lot of times with elk hunting. Mm-hmm. It's like the bull has its cows and he'll answer you, but he's like, eh, I'm going to take my cows this right, way. You right. know, I don't know if that's exactly how it works with turkeys or not, but that's what it seemed mm-hmm. like. Yeah. Had fun doing that. But the next morning I go in and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to treat this like I would an elk, and I'm not going to make a sound. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to walk in on these gobbles in the dark. So that's what I did, and moved in. And I got to the point where I could see across this ravine up on this ridge. And I'm like, what the heck is that? I see this thing like up on the top. And I look at my binoculars and there's just a Tom up there, just like all bloated out, you know, fan spread. I'm like, whoa, that is awesome. Yeah. You know? So I still didn't make a sound. I went up. I treated it like a spot and stalk hunt at that time. I went up, got on the same ridge, started coming down, and I had the bird at like 83 yards and I could see him strutting still. So the novice turkey hunt, well, I'm below novice with turkey hunting, man. Like, I'm like, okay, well, now I'm within 100 yards. This is where you call, mm-hmm. right? So I set up, called, nothing, just went silent, heard him again one time, which is really funny. I was doing some yelps, and then I was like, you know what, screw this, I'm gonna try to just walk over there and just try to get close and shoot him. Well, when I did that, then he gobbled back from where I came from.
Yeah, he came right to where you were.
So like, I was like, wait, he did come to the call, but he came silent mm-hmm. the entire way and then lit up when he was near yeah. me. So it was super cool, man, to experience that. But with my kid, the most, like, the time that I cherished the most about that entire hunt, all of that stuff can go out the window. My daughter and I walked in like 100 yards off the road mm-hmm. and I brought a little chair with me and had her snacks, and she sat there next to me eating her little snacks, whispering, trying to be quiet. And we had a bird light up across the way from us, and I was telling, like, I had my decoy out and I named my decoy Henrietta. Yeah. You know, and she's like talking about Henrietta, like whispering and stuff, and I was trying to explain to her, like, yeah, we're trying to get the boy turkeys to come check out Henrietta, which is a girl turkey, you know. Yeah. And it was just like this, the grin on her face, dude.
Yeah,
that was it for me, man.
That's awesome.
That like made the whole hunt. Yeah. The smile on her face, and she had her little recurve bow with her.
Sweet.
And she told me, she's like, yeah, I'm gonna shoot a turkey and a deer. Yeah. I'm like, okay, let's go.
Dude, isn't that the funniest thing? I remember a couple of years ago, I had Nora, and I just took her. I took her hunting. It was like behind the house, and she had her bow with her. And dude, ironically, it was like a day after work in early November, and I could not get out in enough time to go in the woods myself. Like, I just couldn't. I was like, well, let's just mm-hmm. go up, walk behind the house. And dude, I had this forker just come screaming up over the ridge and get to like 5 yards. Dude, I almost felt like I was about to pick her up because he was just dead on sprint. He got to like 7 yards. No, dude, he put on the brakes, just looked at, like, I could see his eyes like, no. And then he just turned and went the other way. And then I saw a couple other doe like running. And she's like, I should have shot. I'm like, I was like, you were in awe, honey. I was like, I thought you were going to get trampled. So we walked down and found a big tree, just sat there. And a guy like came riding his bike, like on this one trail. And I was like, we're hunting. He's like, good luck, kid. You know, like he said to her, but it's just so cool, man. Like how they are, and just getting that introduction to them. And I even think the cooler thing about turkeys compared to, say, like whitetail with the kids, man, if they are gobbling and they hear that, that's just so cool. Cause then they're like, oh, there is something, like, this is actually, you know, there's like that little bit of glimpse hope probably in their mind where they think it could happen, which is awesome, man. Good for you. And I like, you made it a little family trip and all that stuff. You can't beat that.
No, it was awesome. Yeah. We were driving away already planning for next year. You know,
so. I like it, dude. So let's get into the meat and potatoes of this, Josh. Let's talk about, you know, you just said, you were mentioned about Eric, you mentioned about Brian, guys that are looking to get into hunting. There's guys that maybe are coming out west for their first trip or have been out a couple times, and kind of like what, you know, what your books are about, like how can we just make that bell curve of learning a little bit better, a little bit of understanding, and putting those practices together. So when you think of the hunters and people overcomplicating just Western hunts, you know, what are some of those aspects that, you know, they seem to really overcomplicate when it comes to that?
I think the like number one, hands down, is the gear side of things. Like people And you know what? Bless their heart. I love gear too. You know, people, gear is so fun. I love testing out gear. Getting new gear is always fun. But there is like, there is a point where you can make it too much about gear and less about your effort. Okay. Like going into the hunt. So, you know, like a classic example of this, I think this kind of rings true right now. Like we're in the preseason right now, right? Like we're all of us are shooting our bows a lot. We're tinkering, right? We're trying to get things dialed for season. Doing that right there, like some of the only reason I say this is because these are the messages I get. Okay. Like, and people are messaging me, asking me things like, hey man, is 500 grains enough for an elk? And inside I laugh a little bit, you know, and like I totally respect, they're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to like do right by the animal. I totally understand that. But, there's a lot of, you know, content out there and it's all good. But what's really confusing is some of it is like, oh yeah, this is the best thing. You have to do this for elk. And then this is the best thing over here. And that contradicts that. And at the end of the day, what really matters is, you know, yeah, you don't want to shoot a 200 grain arrow, right? Like that's silly, right? Okay. But what really matters is shooting like I think a great approach, middle of the road setup, like 450 grains, something like that, even 420, whatever. Can you put that thing in the dot? Like that is the most important thing. Lots of people are like, you know, particularly like I'll just bring up elk again, but because that's like the biggest thing, but like people are like really, really concentrated on like, oh yeah, but the shoulder blade. And it's like, dude, you shouldn't be hitting the shoulder blade. You know, like there's so much more real estate on an animal that will kill that animal that aside from the shoulder blade, you know? So it's like, when I hear that stuff, I'm like, I just wish that like people would, it's like they're planning for failure almost. Like they're planning to mess up and hit the shoulder blade when they should be planning to succeed and like planning for like, no, I'm supposed to put it here. Right. So instead of like really, really diving into the rabbit hole of arrow setups and, oh, I need to build up my shoulder so I can shoot 80 pounds and just all that stuff. Like, dude, focus on archery fundamentals. Okay. And get good shooting your bow. Okay. Because at the end of the day, the deer, he doesn't care if you're shooting a fixed blade, a mechanical, if your arrow's 650 grains, he does not care. Okay. At the end of the blood trail, it all looks the same. All right. So what's important is if you can put that arrow exactly where it's supposed to go, that is what is that, that's results, right? And that's build confidence. Like just like really, it's very easy to fall off the deep end and overanalyze all of these things that in the long run, the difference between a 4-fletch and a 3-fletch is not going to that's not going to equal success. Like there's just such a small change there that's going on. So, and you know what? Focusing on like the like skill part of things, the hunting skill part of things, that's kind of hard to do. You know, so part of me understands. So people are trying to be proactive and like do things that they can see, right? But in all reality, it's like, man, the time that you spent tinkering between 3-fletch and 4-fletch, you could have been like doing research on like what mule deer eat during the early season or something like that, right? That's the stuff that's really gonna hold weight in the long run, you know. So, yeah, that's the biggest thing in my opinion, overcomplicating gear. And on the backpack hunting front, a lot of people are probably planning their first backpack hunts right now, right? Whether it's elk hunting or mule deer hunting. I just want to say, like, I love gear, but please do not think that you need to spend $10,000 on gear in order to go backpack hunting, because that is so, so far from the truth. You can use, whether it's used gear, you can get used gear on like backpacking forums. You can, just buy backpacking gear. That's something that's like, it's like, as hunters, we want to buy, like, we want to support hunting companies. And I understand that, but dude, not everyone has 800 bones to throw at a tent. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong with going to REI and buying a tent for $200 or something like that, something that's way more affordable. Then you got, you know, $600 for gas or what, or other things and food and everything like that, right? Rather than spending $800 on a tent. So, yeah, if this is your first time doing this, I think what you need to focus on is get into the field. Do what you need to do to get into the field and make that repeatable, right? Because the other thing is, tags are expensive, right? Like, I think an elk tag, I think, you know, an elk tag in Colorado, I think it's like 700 something bucks or something like that. It might be 800 bucks. Like, that's a lot of money, man. You know, so like, you need to take that into account. So if it comes down to, oh, I'm going to buy this $800 tent, but I'm not going to get to go elk hunting, dude, screw that. Buy, you know, the heavier tent that's 150 bucks or whatever to get you into the field, because what you learn on that hunt, you're going to be able to take with you forever, man. You know? So I think the gear side of things, that people overcomplicate that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and like you were saying, what I kind of, my mentality when I did that hunt out west, Josh, was, you know, I purchased a more expensive pack, but I went with like the brand Slumberjack tent. Like, it was just a cheaper tent. Mm-hmm. It was still a smaller tent. It still wasn't crazy heavy by any means, but man, it worked great. You know what I mean? Like, it was easy to set up. It did its job. I also wasn't up like 18,000 elevation or anything like that where I would need, you know what I mean? It did the job and it made it simple and easy. And I could see that where people could get lost with that. And when it comes to like other pitfalls, and this, you said about, man, worry about what mule deer eat during this time period, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I would say that's probably what, you know, like, I guess discuss some of that where maybe you either personal experiences with yourself, with other acquaintances, like what are some of those pitfalls, like when it comes to actually understanding what you should kind of like zero in on?
So I'll use, I think the most shining example of this for me, like in my experience, is black bears. In Arizona, I'm doing this in this week. Okay. Like, bears live and die by their stomachs. They are slaves to their stomachs. Okay. So finding the food that they are going to be eating during certain times of year is the path to success. But the hard part about that is it's a moving target. Okay. Food sources change from year to year, and it's entirely dependent on rainfall. So, it's really important to learn what those food sources are. Not only that, but you actually physically have to go and look at them to see, oh, is this oak fruiting this year? Okay. You can't bank on it. Okay. You can waste a lot of time. And so if you think about, like, if you break down, like, oh yeah, I got 7 days to hunt. Okay. If you spend the first 3 days looking for food, that really means you only have 4 days of good hunting after that. So if you took the time ahead of time, you know, whether that's, I can get in this later, but whether that's like doing set, like e-scouting or perusing on backpacking forums or whatever to like get a sense for the foliage in the area, you can spend all that time ahead of time and cut down the time that you're going to have to spend on your feet. Because I realize that if you're coming, you know, like if you're coming out west, you know, I get it. You might not be able to make a trip to scout. boots on the ground. I understand that. But if you can do what you can, you're going to cut time down. Okay. So like this week coming up, I'm going scouting for bears. I'm not looking for bears. I'm looking for food that they're going to be eating come the end of August. Okay. That is so boring, dude. Like, he's like, oh yeah, I'm going scouting for bears. And people think I'm going to go actually look for bears. No, I'm actually just hiking around looking at plants is what I'm doing. Because what you're doing is you're planning where they're going to be before they're there. Right. And to ensure you have a good hunt. So in the case of other animals, I do this all the time. Like if you can go on like backpacking forums and stuff like that, people will post pictures from their trips. Okay. High country mule deer, for instance. Okay. Like that's a beautiful place to be. So a lot of people backpack through the Alpine. So you can see what a lot of this stuff looks like before you actually go. So, and you can get a sense for, what is that? Okay. That's like a yellow flower. There's purple flowers and stuff like that. And then you can go kind of like research what those are and like do stuff like, a lot of times, like when I'm watching hunting films, somebody shows a mule deer or whatever, and he's eating. I'm like, what is that? What is he eating? Instead of, oh my goodness, that's a giant buck, right? So it's like, you pay attention to things like this because it changes from state to state. And you can almost get a sense, you know, as you familiarize yourself with that, you can almost get a sense of, oh, that looks like Utah. You know, like it just looks a little bit different because of the vegetation. So I think that's the stuff that, you know, like reading books on mule deer and behavior and reading books on bears and reading books on elk and stuff like that. I think that's a lot of the stuff that flies under the radar because it's all it is, which that's a horrible way of saying it, but all it is knowledge. And you can't really see knowledge, right? It's easy to see, oh yeah, check out the new broadheads that I got, blah, blah, blah. Or like my new tent and stuff like that. That's easy to see. But the knowledge side of things, man, take the time and knowledge is 1000% power out in the mountains. Yeah,
I like that, dude. And I agree with you. I mean, I even have changed that aspect of scouting in the whitetail woods for me. I mean, last fall, like right before the season and maybe early season, I was like, hey, I'm going scouting. And I mean, finding scrapes, finding rubs and all that stuff was fun, but it was like, what acorns are dropping? Like where, you know, if I'm looking at just the caps, okay, they've been in here. Where's the next tree that I have to go find? And what are they browsing on? So that is awesome that you said that, because as soon as you mentioned that, I was like, ding, like that, you know, that's kind of, I don't want to say that's next level stuff, 'cause it's really not, but it's an overlooked for sure. I think
it's overlooked and it's quite, I mean, I don't want to offend anyone, but it's quite basic. You know, we're talking about, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's like you're hunting an animal. That animal needs food, water, shelter. What are those things? Where are those things? Right? Where do those things occur? And then you're probably going to find that animal, you know, it's and like going out and looking for sign, like tracks and stuff like that. Like these are like, just like day one hunting type of stuff. But I just don't hear a lot of people talk about stuff like that. Like I found one of my best deer spots I've ever found. Okay. I never saw a deer in there, but I went in and I was like, this is like the most deer tracks I've ever seen in my life. So it's like, you're trusting. It's very hard to trust that. You're trusting this imprint in the ground. Okay. I shot a bear, a couple years back in Arizona based off of, there wasn't even paw prints. It was the pine needles had been moved down a trail. And it was like these like ovals that I found. And I'm like, I know that's a bear, but I had the first time I saw that bear was when I shot him. And I had hunted for probably a week before that. Never saw him. I knew he was in there though, based off the sign. That's hard to do like mentally, because it, like my brain wants to be like, no, I gotta, let's go look for him. You know, let's go look for him. Let's try to glass. Let's call, let's do something. Let's be proactive here. But it's like, no. The woods tell a story. Okay. And if you can familiarize yourself with that language and be able to read, and I'm not a master at this. Okay. Like, but you get better over time. You'll be able to see that story and read it and apply that to your hunting.
Yeah. It's funny. You say pine needles getting moved, all that stuff. And like where I'm at with black bears, it's like, there's a boulder. Why is that boulder in the middle of this two track road? I'm like, gosh, man, now I got to get a tree and help like wedge it up over back to where it belongs. But yeah, man. So when you look at the e-scouting thing, how have you simplified that aspect of things? Cause like you said, when you went to Idaho, it's 18 hours. Like that's not just an easy drive for you to get there and do that very simply and easily, you know? So when you do your e-scouting, how have you simplified that? What are the, like maybe your top two things you're looking for, or three things that you're looking for when it comes to doing that e-scouting, where you maybe once you get there, it's like a checklist, like, okay, I verified this. Ooh, this definitely doesn't look like that. So moving on to that next thing. So like, what have you done for yourself to simplify your scouting process?
So it really all comes down to some of the stuff I was just talking about. Is like, what does the animal need? And so like, it's like elevation is key for a lot of animals. So it's like, I need to find the right elevation. And there's tools out there like that you can use. Like Onyx has like a filter on their app where you can like Terrain X is what it's called, and you can like, okay, I just want to see the country in between, you know, 3,000 feet and 6,000 feet, right? And so it blacks everything else out, and those are the areas in that unit or whatever, wherever you're hunting, that will be highlighted. So that's part of my process of like narrowing down country. But then another important thing though, dude, just again, super basic, is like access. Like, can I get to it? Right? Like, where am I going to park? Things like that. So like a challenge, so that early season bear hunt that I was telling you about, snowfall is an issue there. So 18 hours away, I want to dang well make sure that I'm going to be able to get to the trailhead that I'm at. So I picked a trailhead that was at a very low elevation that I knew wasn't going to get snow. Okay, so access to the right elevation. Okay, and then from there, what I'm really trying to do is, you know, so backpack hunting in particular, it's like picking out centrally located potential campsites where I know I'm going to be able to get to water, which the water thing is something that you can research through like backpacking sites, and sometimes you can see it from satellite imagery. Can I get to water? Do I have a ridge to run with my glass, you know, that has like features that I want to look into, right? So like high country mule deer, for instance. Things that I'm really looking for high country mule deer is like big, long east faces that have sparse cover on them. Okay. Like, so timber pockets, because those east faces are going to be lit up in the morning with the morning sun, and red mule deer, their coats, they pop like mad in that sun. Okay. But then that east face, if it has that cover on it, it's going to give them bedding opportunities, because as the sun moves over your head, the more shade is going to be created. Okay, so a big east face is actually going to be entirely shaded in the afternoon. All right, so like this changes from species to species for me a little bit, but those are the basic things that I'm looking for, is like access to the area, access to the right elevation, and then centrally located campsite where I can get to quickly get to water, quickly get to where I want to glass from, et cetera. That is the bare bones of e-scouting to me. Okay. And you can take it a lot further than that, but that's kind of what I'm
heck
doing.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm even sure people listening that haven't gone out west, you think about that type of stuff. I mean, obviously in the Whitetail Woods, we think about like, you know, wood side, the north facing, you know, all that type of stuff for bedding and south facing, all that stuff, and which way the prevailing wind's going to go. It's the same thing like that. And like you said, man, about with the mule deer coat, that red coat on that. What's funny is that time when we went and that morning hit, I was glassing to one side, like it was right along like a private mountain. And I walked over and I looked on the other and I was like, holy cow, there's two mule deer right there. And I remember Dimitri was like, where? Cause he was like glassing that drainage. I was like, dude, they're right there. I didn't even have my binos up. They just stuck out like crazy. That's pretty cool that you said that. Now, when you are there and you're set up, I mean, you have some really phenomenal films of you, you know, obviously filling your tags and doing those spot and stalks, man. Over the years, when you have stumbled or done those things and you're like, I just need, like, has anything crossed your mind where you were just like, I just need to do this and stick to my guns and simplify getting in on a, whatever animal it be? Like, is there something now that you're like, it is just so basic that, like you were saying earlier, that's really not even talked about?
Dude, I mean, I don't know about it not being talked about, but like at the end of the day, like if you got a deer tag in your pocket and there's deer out there, go get the dang deer. You know what I mean? Like there's like people spend so much time like overcomplicating stalks and like, I'm sure this is prevalent in whitetail hunting too. Cause in my opinion, y'all are thinkers, right? Like that's a thinking man's game. Okay. Which I'm excited to dive into, by the way. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I'm doing like my first legit, like whitetail hunt, with Jace actually, this November in Colorado. So the whole tree stand thing, that's like new to me. I'm excited to dive into that, but it's a different thing. Right. So when it comes to the spot and stalk thing, in the beginning, I did this too. I would sit back and I'd be glassing the deer or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what the wind is doing over there. I he's probably not going to be there by the time I get there. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much time it might take me an hour to get over there. You know, just like all these things, running through your head instead of just being like, you know what, man, I'm out here bow hunting and I have a deer tag in my pocket and there's a deer standing over there and I would really like to bring that deer home. The only way that that's going to happen is you need to pick your stuff up and go over there. Okay. And I don't care if you don't know what you're doing. By the time you're done doing that, you're going to know more than you did before you took your first step that way. Right. And that right there is, sadly something that I think a lot of people hold themselves back from, right? Like we as a society, dude, like we are conditioned to avoid failure. All right. But failures are the building blocks. I think Brian Barney said this before, like failures are the building blocks to success. He's absolutely right. You know, it's just like it's the puzzle pieces you need to see the picture, man. And those lessons that you like, I still, dude, I like some of the stocks I've done when I was younger and stuff like that. Like I still apply that today to my hunting. Okay. And, because of those times where I was like, screw it, I'm going. And I messed up. Yeah, sure. But in doing so, I created like, I've talked about this before, but I created like these rules for myself. Okay. I was like, Me personally, I never come from below a deer. It just never works out for me. Okay. I'm always going to side hill into them or come from above. That's just how I do things. Okay. My buddy, he's done it. He comes from below. He likes it. He's been successful doing that, but it's very situational, right? Like he's applied that to his own strategy. For me, it doesn't work. Okay. Cause I'm just like, the deer has the advantage. He's up there. It's like, think about yourself in a tree stand. It's like, you're up, you're elevated so you can see. It doesn't make sense to me to come from below, because now the deer is elevated and he can see everything. Right. Plus, given the time of day, like your wind, your thermals could be pushing up to the deer, blah, 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 blah. So in order to just avoid the, yes, it could work out, but it's probably not going to work out, I'm just going to like not do that. And I'm just going to come in from the side or come in from above, because those have always provided me with the highest percentage of success. Right. But I didn't learn that from a book. I learned that from messing up. I'm like coming from below and getting busted time and time again. And then every time, like, I'm not doing that again. Dang it. You know? So that right there, man, you have to go and do that stuff to learn. You really do. And it's all part of the process, man. You can't expect to like grab a bow and go glass up a big old buck and just, you know, go over there, put the moves on them and put an arrow in them. You can't I try to look at these things in steps, right? Like when I was starting out, it's like, okay, well, if I've never gotten within bow range of a deer, that right there is a success if you do that. Okay. So it's like, okay, maybe I messed up, but you know what? I was 43 yards from that buck. Heck yeah. That means I can do this, right? Then it provides you with more confidence, more pot. You like, you pick up those like little things, like these little, like, it's like a breadcrumb trail of positive reinforcement, right? That'll lead you to success, and you feed off of that and keep building upon that. And eventually, I promise you, if you stick with it, okay, it's not going to not happen. It will happen. You will arrow that deer. It's going to happen, but you just have to stick with it and keep following that breadcrumb trail, and realize you're,
It's like avoid putting yourself in a trap. And that is, right. You know what I mean? Because I remember you, and I remember an article where you, that you wrote about it, but then you also shared it with me that one time where you made a stalk, and I can't remember if it was successful for you or not, but you're like, man, this wind is blowing and he's going to smell me. But there was some obstacle, like a rock or something like that, or a boulder, where your wind was probably going over the animal. I remember you telling story like that, but like, you wouldn't know that. You could have been glassing from hundreds of yards away, be like, exactly what you were saying earlier. But by you doing that, dude, that's huge. And I like that, because I implemented that this past year, where I was a little bit, I don't want to say aggressive. It's just, man, this is my time of when I could hunt. Is the wind great? Not so great, but I'm going to go give it a shot. Guess what? My first on film kill actually finally happened, and my wind was kind of blowing in that direction. It was flirting with of getting busted or not. So that is huge, where, again, you do not put yourself into some sort of trap in your mind and physically, where you're like, should I go or not go? If you have that tag in your pocket, like Josh said, go after it. And I think that's a great thing to do.
And it's like, I'm not saying be reckless. Okay. But like, if you can get the wind right, go, man, just go. Like, cause here, like, I remember when I was coming up and I would read on like hunting forums. I don't know if those are a thing anymore, but, and I'd read like, oh yeah, but he was in a great spot for a stalk. And I'm like, what does that mean? I didn't know what that meant at all. You know, you will figure out what that means if you keep getting these plays. Okay. And pretty soon you're going to paint a picture for yourself of like, oh, you know what? When they're up against a cliff, I can usually get right above them. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and you put these things together, you can see stalks before you go on them, right? And then that'll help you realize, because there are times where I'll sit back and I'm like, that's not going to work. You know, but you don't attain that until you go and find out that actually that's not going to work. So
I like that, Josh. So what kind of one of the aspects of simplifying, say, gear and all that type of stuff, I think is probably the more important side of things. And I want to talk about food, like the food and water aspect. So when you know, what have you done to help simplify that aspect of your backpacking trip?
I have, over the past couple years, I have really just started to make it calorie based and foods that I really enjoy eating. Because I tell you what, dude, if you can go buy like quote unquote like backpacking food, and it's good. Like there's a lot of good stuff out there. I love it. But it can get old. Okay. And if it gets old when you're out there, you're not motivated to eat it. Which then you're putting yourself in even more of a caloric deficit than you're going to be in, even if you did finish your bag, because this is a lot of work, backpack hunting, right? So I've learned that I quickly found out that through the years, I found out that, yeah, maybe I had like a certain amount of calories in my bag, but I wasn't eating half of it because I just didn't want to. Like one of those things for me is like salted almonds. I love salted almonds. I really do. I eat them at home, but in the backcountry, it is not appetizing to me. It's too dry. It's just too dry and bland, and I'm not motivated to eat it. So I found myself never eating those things, you know, and I'm like, gosh, dang it, which is really a bummer because like those things are so jam packed with calories. You can get so many calories in salted almonds. But if I'm not going to eat them, then why is it there? I'd rather take something else with me. So I've really just kind of, and my wife is like kind of the wizard behind all of this. I almost don't build my food bags anymore. She just like, I'm just like, I'm just going to let you do whatever. You know, like, so something that's super important is realizing how many calories you do need. Okay. And what that is, in my opinion, is what's the number that I'm never going to really surpass. Right. Like, so for me, that's like around 3,500 calories. I know that if I have 3,500 calories in my bag, I'm not going to eat all that and then be hungry. Now, there are days where I won't eat all of it, and that's fine, but I'm not, you know, it's just, I just didn't happen. I'm not hungry, but I'm never going to go hungry with that type of a bag. Before that, I would pack like 2,500 calories, and I found myself from time to time, like bumming food off of my buddies, you know? So the best way to experiment with that, in my opinion, is to go out on like a day trip or whatever, and like intentionally bring a little too much food with you, right? To have like a buffer, but like, you know, what did you eat throughout the day? You know, and like have a little log. And like, because all of us are a little bit different. Like a friend of mine, he does not eat until like 10:30 in the morning. Like he just doesn't consume any calorie. He's good with coffee. Like that works for him. Me, dude, I wake up a lot of times, I'm ravenous. I want my coffee. I want oatmeal or whatever. Like that's just how I get going. Okay. But for him, that's not what he does. And he only eats like maybe two meals a day, but in the times that he does eat, the dude is like pounding calories. Okay. He's taken like a freeze-dried meal that already has like 1,100 calories in it, and he's dumping extra cheese and stuff into those meals to increase it. The guy might eat 2,000 calories in one sitting. Okay. By the way, the guy is built like a slender oak tree. Okay, he's like, the guy doesn't have an ounce of fat on him, but that's just how he is. He just, like, he doesn't really eat anything in the morning. So, long story short, like, you got to figure out, like, what how much food works for you throughout the day. And then, you know, you get like a half a dozen trips under your belt and you'll start to see a pattern, right? Of like, oh, you know what? Most of the time, and this is what you should go for. You shouldn't go for the exceptions. You need to go for most of the time, right? Most of the time I eat whatever, around 3,100 calories is the average. Okay, cool. Then you know that. Then you apply that. And when you build your food bag, dude, there is nothing wrong with putting Reese's in there. Like, you don't have to put everything labeled backcountry into your food bag. Like, bring food with you that you are going to enjoy eating. Okay. Like me, like, I like my, I'll like make my own oatmeal and stuff a lot of times, rolled oats, put some, you know, chocolate whey in there, whatever, raisins, blah, 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 like this, like, hearty breakfast that I can have in the backcountry. I love that. There isn't a way in the world I'm not going to have my coffee back there. That's one of, like, I love doing that, you know, like, I've experimented with no coffee before and I just don't like it. It worked, but it's not, just not for me. Yeah. So, bring stuff with you that you're going to be excited to eat, you know, and vary it up, you know, like I used to bring like the same thing every single day. And I mean, again, it just kind of gets boring, man. Like, put stuff in there that you're going to look forward to eating. You know, it's like, oh, today I've got Pop-Tarts. Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, like, yep. That's awesome. Like food is a morale booster. Man, like, you could be like down in the dumps and then you're just like, you know what? I'm going to, you know, fire up the stove. I'm going to make a cup of coffee and I'm going to eat my Snickers. You know what I mean? And I'm going to sit there and, you know, by the time I'm done eating that, I'm going to feel better. You know, it's the on backpack hunts, man, it's the little things like that, that like really can like turn your mindset around. You know, like, for the longest time, I used to bring like hot cocoa with me that I'd put in my coffee. And I would like, I'm like, oh, dude, neat. It's a dialed in mocha. Yep. That's what, yeah, I used to call them. Like, you know, so yeah, there's not any rules, you know, to the food thing. It's like, what works for you. What I will say is like, try to pay attention to perishables. Cause like, there's been a couple times where, you know, I've heard stories, people, because I used to be a big bagel guy. I used to like bring bagels in the backcountry a lot. I had one guy message me and he's like, oh yeah, I got like 11 miles in or whatever and all my bagels went moldy. Oh man, that sucks. You know what I mean? So pay attention to that stuff. I try to keep stuff that's, you know, dehydrated and, you know, stuff like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's good. So, do you feel like you're you got your system down like real good right now?
I feel like it's the best it's been, you know, on the food front. Like I like what I'm bringing out there with me. I bring like a lot of like jerky. Like my favorite lunch right now of all time is like a tuna packet and Ritz crackers. And like, I'll pair that with like a, you know, I don't know, like trail mix or something like that. I do bring backpacking type of food with me, but I also don't, you know, I also bring some other stuff that you can just grab in a gas station. Right. Because that stuff is like gonna, you know, it's gonna like be super enjoyable for me to eat. You know what I mean? So, I usually do like, I usually always have like a BCAA in my food bag. I love having that like at the end of the day, because again, it kind of plays along the same lines, but there is a little bit of strategy here. Is like, one, you are probably dehydrated. Like, I definitely, like, I'm bad about this. I don't drink enough water. I just don't like I try to remind myself, but in all reality, the average amount of water that I drink in a day on a backpack hunt is probably about a liter. Okay. And that's aside from cooking and stuff like that. I have friends, they'll go through 4 liters a day drinking. And I'm just like, I feel like that's a job.
Yeah.
You know what no I mean? Doubt. You're like,
yeah. I'm with you.
I feel like if I drink that much.
Yeah.
If I drank that much water, I'd be like spending too much time, you know, walking off, going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm.
No, that's how I was. I'm not a big, even to this day, my wife's like, you need to drink more. I'm like, you know what I mean? I'm like, I guess, you know, like, I guess I'll drink some water. No, man, that's good. Kind of closing remark, Josh, man, like what's a final tip, advice you have for someone heading out west, maybe on their first trip or to maybe finally cash in on, writing there, punching that tag, you know, cutting that little triangle notch on their tag.
I think something like, especially like you're heading out west, you know, and you know, you got a 7 to 10 day hunt planned or whatever. I know it doesn't matter if it's a backpack hunt or not, but before you leave, all right, you need to make sure that everything is dialed at home. Okay. So like what I mean by that is get all the work done that you need to get done. And more than that. Okay. So you're not thinking about it, right? You're up there thinking about, oh, I got to answer that email and stuff like that. That is not, you need to separate yourself from that stuff out there. That's going to skew you wrong out in the mountains. If you're a family man, like something I try to do before I leave is, you know, I do stuff like, I'm like vacuum the house. I'm going to do all the dishes. You know what I mean? Like do your part, man. Like when we're gone, your significant other has a lot of pressure on them to hold the fort down, especially if you have kids, you know? So, you know, I always like, it's like, you know, I'm going to go have like a daddy daughter day with my kid, right? Before that, and let my wife kind of have like a, you know, time to herself. Right. And just try to, in the, you know, just try to make life easier for them when you're gone. Test out on more of like the gear side of things. Know your gear, know its capabilities, and take the time to actually test it. Okay. So, I don't want to get too far in the weeds here, but I just did this and I think it was super beneficial. So I just got a new arrow setup, super psyched on it. On paper, okay, and from what like computer programs tell me and everything like that, I should be in a 300 spine arrow. Okay. So I go hang out with my buddy Dale and he's like, why are you in a 300? And I was like, well, that's what's like been recommended from 9 ways from Sunday to me, you know, from a lot of different resources. He's like, and so we sat there and we physically tested 300 versus 350 head to head. And it was unquestionable that the 350s was grouping better for me, like arrows touching grouping. And it was like, wow. Well, looks like I'm going to shoot a 350 spine, you know, and like that decision was entirely based on results. Okay. And that's what matters, right? It's like, there's a lot of recommendations out there and you know what? I make a lot of them. Okay. Like I recommend gear all the time, but at the end of the day, you really need to go off of the results that you are seeing. On your end, like if you're getting crap broadhead flight with this particular broadhead over here, dude, don't try to force it to work. Like if you got another setup over here that works better, then use that. Don't force this thing over here to work because you got a discount code on it or something like that. You know what I mean? Like that's the world we live in right now. It really is. Like, and it's awesome. It's so awesome. Like people, you know, people coming together, like we're all helping, we're trying to help each other out. But like what works for me, the best thing for me, maybe it's not good for you. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But you need to, it's like boots. Okay. It's like, dude, never ever. It's like your buddy. Oh yeah, these are the best boots that I've ever used in my life. You got to buy them. You might absolutely hate that pair of boots. It might give you blisters all over the place, and you might be absolutely miserable wearing that pair of boots. Okay. So you like own up to you. Okay. And what works for you and your system. Right. So know your gear, and then know the, you know, more on the backpacking side of things, like know the capabilities of your gear too, because I think that helps you pack your backpack, right? Like clothing is the biggest one, clothing and like a sleeping bag. It's like, oh yeah, my bag is rated to 20 degrees. Have you actually used it in 20 degrees? Like, do you know that? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because something that's a shame is the dude that brings the 0 degree bag on a hunt that's going to be 40 degrees at night. You're carrying more weight than you need to. You're taking up more space in your backpack than you need to. It's making you less efficient. You're probably sleeping worse too because you're sweating at night. Okay. And then on the clothing front, I do this all the time, man. Like, I'm like, I will look at the temperature outside. And then I'm like, oh, it's going to be 41 degrees this morning. Okay. I'm going to wear this particular piece with nothing else. And I want to see how it works. Go and do that stuff, dude. Take the time to do that. I went to a wedding one time in Idaho. Okay. And it was like, the high was going to be like 21 degrees or something ridiculous like that. Okay. I used the wedding to test a jacket when I was there. Okay. So if you know that stuff, then you know, you can look at like a weather report and be like, okay, this is what I actually need. Not, I'm just going to throw a bunch of stuff in the bag, and overkill it. And I'm going to carry way too much weight with me and just all that. You know what I mean? Like that, super important to actually know the capabilities of your gear.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. Well said. Well, great way to close that one out, Josh. Dude, I appreciate you. Best of luck to you for what's up for you this fall. I'm looking forward to catching up with you again, just on a personal side of things, just to see what you have going on. Where could people check out your book? Where could people check out your YouTube, Instagram, all that stuff, buddy?
Yeah, so all the social platforms, just search Dialed In Hunter, whether it's YouTube, Instagram, any of that, just search Dialed In Hunter and I'll pop up. If you're interested in picking up books, you can search Becoming a Backpack Hunter on Amazon. That'll pop up. Search Becoming a Bow Hunter. That'll pop up. And both of them have Kindle and paperback versions available. And then, you know what, man, if you want to, reach out and send me a message on Instagram, I usually answer all the messages that I get. I'm happy to chat hunting with people. And, thanks for having me on, man. Best of luck to everyone out there. This is like a super exciting time of year right now. Like it's preseason. All of us are probably about to burst, you know, can't wait to get out into the field. So just good luck to everyone. Hope everyone has like the best season possible.
Awesome, man. Please go check out Josh. Like I said, he's been a friend of mine for the last 4.5 years, basically of doing this. And, is one of the realest as real gets, and awesome individual. Go support him, check him out. Thanks again for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next week. Antler up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Antler Up Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please go check us out on our Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and Go Wild, and at antlerupoutdoors.com. If you enjoyed this episode, go leave a review and subscribe for next week's episode. Until then, Antler Up.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.